This is the BBC.
For this week's File on 4, we've been investigating the impact of the ever more sophisticated economy around drugs in prisons. We've visited Altcourse Jail in Liverpool to hear how it's being tackled there, and we've spoken to its hidden victims, the families in communities paying the price of a trade controlled by violence. Here's what we've found.
I went with £30,000. By the time I got out, I had 560,000 odd. That is like £500,000 over 3 years, right?
This man has run a successful business using telephone banking, drone technology, and home delivery services. And he's done it all from prison, dealing drugs.
Our aim is ultimately to make it a safe place where criminality doesn't go on. We try and stop them having another victim, but sometimes we haven't got the tools to stop it.
And this man runs a prison where drug gangs undermine stability and hamper efforts at rehabilitation. It's a struggle at the heart of the prison system in England and Wales, a struggle File on 4 has seen from every angle. We meet the drug users, the suppliers, and the hidden victims of this ever more sophisticated trade.
I've had people phone me up and tell me if I don't pay a certain amount of money, I'll have people come around and do me over with a baseball bat.
You've had people saying that to you?
Yeah.
Prisoners or...?
Prisoners. My son owed £350 because he'd had some drugs.
Roughly how many times a month do you get a call or a text about money?
Recently, every week, it's £100 a week.
So have you been in prison before, mate?
Yeah.
You've been in here?
Yeah.
Any problems?
No.
When you're back in court, pal?
No.
I've come to Altcourse Prison in North Liverpool, one of Britain's biggest jails, to find out how staff are tackling the threat posed by drugs. It's a modern prison on an 80-acre site surrounded by woodland, far removed in design from a Victorian city centre prison. Yet it has many of the same challenges. Half of the 1,100 male prisoners at Altcourse arrived with a drug problem or developed one after being sent here.
OK, so we're just into the admission building now. So this is the start of the prisoner's journey. They come in, go through the metal detector there.
Steve Williams is the director or governor of Altcourse, one of five UK prisons run by the private company G4S. In the past, Altcourse has faced criticism for failing to make the connection between gang-related violence at the prison and drugs. But now, it's a priority.
If you just see Sean there, pal, we'll sort you out.
What we always look at is around stability across the whole prison, and there's many factors in that. What you tend to find time and time again, whether it's violence, self-harm, all the other indicators that sort of worry you about an unstable prison, a lot of it is linked to drugs.
Yeah. OK, this is a body orifice machine. What it does, prisoner sits on this chair and it will indicate if he's got any types of metal upon his person.
Every single prisoner going in and out of the prison sits on that boss chair. They have to be sterile before they go into the prison and sterile leaving the prison. That's just one of the tools we've got here. We've also got our wands we've got over. Oh, that's my boots. I haven't got none, that's my boots.
Three of the staff in the admissions area, Matty, Tom and Matty, show me the latest equipment for detecting contraband. The boss chair can identify hidden mobile phones. They're banned in jail, but are smuggled in by inmates to order drugs and arrange deals.
That fine machine over there is our big thing. Brand new, and it's doing its job great.
Altcourse is also trialling a device to pick up non-metallic items, including tiny parcels or wraps of drugs.
This is basically a big X-ray machine. If someone fails the boss chair, or if we think that they're bringing things in, they'll go on the little grey platform over there. This one I'll show you now is just a demo. Stand up, face me. The scan will take about 10 seconds.
And what we're looking at, the image on the screen, is what you would see if you were doing an X-ray.
It's like what you get at hospitals. I will show you a positive scan.
It's a sort of skeleton-style picture, but there's a foreign object.
This man come through here a few weeks ago. Never set the boss chair off. We put him on the machine. He come up positive. He's got something secreted on him. We couldn't tell what it is, but it's not metal.
Where was that secreted?
We think that was up his backside.
And what happened after you saw this scan?
We've asked him to hand over what item he had on him. He refused. He said he didn't have anything on him. There was a disciplinary hearing on adjudication. He went guilty on that. So he then got basically to stay in their segregation for 7 days. And then after that, he was brought back up here. There was no fines on him. So he was then put on the units.
So what, he'd taken it out at some point?
He'd either taken it out or he had used it all himself.
Right.
Well, fingers crossed he'd taken it out and flushed it.
The X-ray scanner is being targeted at prisoners on licence who are sent back to jail for a brief period, 14 or 28 days, for breaching the conditions of their release. There's been a surge in such cases across England and Wales since offender supervision was tightened and extended to all prisoners who've been let out. And there's evidence the process is being abused to bring in drugs, as Steve Williams, director of Alt Course, explains.
From a prisoner's point of view, they know they can get a short-term recall. They'll come in with the drugs, and they also know that they'll get paid, you know, in excess of about £3,000-£4,000 for that to do it.
It seems pretty extraordinary that people would deliberately get themselves locked up to carry drugs in order to make money. I mean, that's a sign of either desperation or how lucrative the market is inside prisons, isn't it?
It is, and, you know, the street value as opposed to the prison value is 10 times more. So, you know, for these criminal gangs, the gains are quite big in a prison. And you've got a captive audience that doesn't particularly want to be here. You've got some people under stress, pressure about court cases that will think that drugs is the answer, so may take drugs for the first time in a prison. So they've got, I suppose, the perfect storm within the prison to use, and that's where they're making their money from.
My name's Nick and I'm an addict. We'll start the countdown at 25 years. Is anyone here today celebrating 25 years of recovery? 20 years. 19. 18.
At a special gathering in Hull, we caught up with some people who'd successfully completed a drug treatment programme to find out more about their experiences in prison.
2 years.
One of them is James. He's been clean for more than 2 years after spending most of his adult life in and out of custody, committing crimes to feed his addiction to heroin. James saw the prison recall process as a way to make money. He'd smuggle in a range of drugs, including spice, a synthetic form of cannabis formerly known as illegal high, that's been widely blamed for a spike in medical emergencies and violence in prisons.
We all cottoned onto the system whereby you was recalled for 28 days. When I had nothing going on for me outside, you know, it was a much better justification, if you like, saying I might as well be in prison and I might as well take drugs into prison because there I'm getting looked after, you know, because it seemed a lot more difficult outside than inside prison because of how low I felt and worthless I felt. I just thought it was an easier option to go back inside.
And how much drugs would you take with you on each trip?
The most I've ever took, I'd say, probably about £600 worth in what I could earn in prison.
And what drugs were they?
Spice, prescription drugs, tablets, cannabis. I've took little bits of heroin into prison before, and that was to maintain my habit.
And how did you get them past the security?
You know, I'd used to conceal up my back passage. You'd be stood in a cubicle, they'd ask you to undress. It'd just be a visible check. You'd go through your clothes and then you put your clothes back on.
What was that like going through the gates, the security, knowing that you've got drugs on you?
I'd say there's an element of fear and anxiety, obviously. But I think it was more that was my means to survive and that was my means to make where I was going more comfortable. I've done it on at least half a dozen times.
And were you ever caught?
No.
When you were doing this, were you aware of the sort of the turmoil that you were potentially creating in prisons, in, you know, making them more unstable, particularly with spice, the effects of which are very unpredictable?
No. It was all about me, really. It was very selfish. I wasn't really at a stage where I was being compassionate to how it was affecting others or the system.
Back at Alt Course, I'm taken to the Visits Hall, a bright, airy room the size of a gymnasium, with tables and chairs dotted around, and a soft seating area with iPads for children. On the busiest days, there'll be 40 prisoners and 120 of their relatives and friends here. For most, it's precious family time. But as the head of the offender management unit, Alan Warburton, told me, some have sinister intentions.
There's a variety of ways that visitors will use to try and smuggle drugs in. They'll secrete it on the person, they'll use children, you know, on occasions, even to the point of placing it in nappies and things like that. And we have to combat all those things. Pushchairs, we'll supply our own pushchairs to bring the children in so we know that they're sterile. All the visitors and prisoners are all biometriced when they come in, so we have all their full details. Prisoners are all searched prior to coming in, and also visitors are searched as well. What staff are always on the lookout for is any prisoners, people looking over the shoulders constantly, checking the areas, fidgeting around their clothing. Sometimes they'll leave it till the very end of a visit. Sometimes they'll try and do things right at the very start. So you have to be ahead of the game and you have to be aware constantly.
Sometimes that visitor may have come in and made three or four passes before we've clicked onto that they're actually meeting different people. You know, we've had people where we send them into the visits hall and say, yeah, yeah, your visitor's over there, and then they're walking around the visits hall trying to find their visitor because they just haven't got a clue who it is. They just know they've got to visit and they've got to turn up. So that could be the prisoners that's been coerced to come across and book a visit for someone, or it could be the visitors being coerced to bring in, or the visitor could be a professional drug runner that is going in and out of prisons.
I put the package in my bra and then I took my taxi down to the prison and waited for my visit. I went over and I put the parcel from my bra to my waistline, and that's when he put his hands up my top and took the package from me.
This is the account of a young woman from the northeast of England who paid a heavy price for visiting her boyfriend in prison. I'll call her Claire, that's not her real name, and to safeguard her identity further, her words have been revoiced. She brought in two bags of spice, which had a value in prison of £2,000, money Claire's boyfriend needed to pay back dealers.
He was there for a couple of months and then he started having a couple of problems with money and stuff because his family didn't send him anything. What I was sending him wasn't enough in there. He must have got himself in debt. He'd said he was in a couple of fights because he was in debt. Sometimes when I visited him, he was getting beaten up. He had black eyes and split lips, and it wasn't very nice to see, really. And he started giving my number to people in prison and asking them to phone me for me to take stuff into prison for him, and then obviously be able to sell it in there and make money. At first I said no, and I stopped going to visit him as much. But then he must have got desperate and he started sending people to my house, giving people my address to come round and like threaten me to do it, saying that if I didn't take it in, they'd get Dave beaten up more in jail and they'd do stuff to my mum's house.
The threats went on for 3 weeks before Claire relented and took the drugs in, but she was caught.
It's all on camera in there, isn't it? And the screws saw me as well. I had to go to the police station then, and I was locked up for 12 hours. It was horrible. I thought I was going to jail.
In fact, Claire avoided prison, but she was given a community sentence and sacked from her job. It's left her plans for the future in ruins and her family devastated. Figures seen by File on 4 show that 517 people were prosecuted last year for smuggling illicit items into prisons in England and Wales. 248 of them were women, almost double the number 4 years earlier. The total includes prisoners, corrupt staff and visitors. Steve Williams.
It's heartbreaking sometimes because you will arrest someone and then it's my staff that have to sit in a room with that person for, you know, half an hour while we're waiting for the police to attend site, and they break down, they're in tears, they're then worried about their family. But at the end of the day, you know, if those drugs had to come in, the misery that that creates within the prison sort of offweighs some of that sympathy. And let's be honest, you know, these criminal gangs are ruthless, and that's the way they operate. They pick on vulnerable people and they don't care about them. They just get their means done, which is to get those drugs in here.
This programme has been given a unique insight into the mindset of the criminals behind the drugs trade. We've spoken to a former prisoner who claims that at one point he was coordinating the supply of drugs in 9 establishments. We agreed not to use his real name or voice. We're calling him Simon.
When I was a kid, I was like 15, and I was bullied when I first went to prison to the extent that I felt suicidal. And I always remember that clearly. I had no control over anything. And then when next time I went to prison, I realised that the only way to have control in jail, proper control, was to control the drug trade. I would normally work it as we'd go into a wing, wouldn't speak to anyone for a couple of days, purely to see who had control of the wing. And once you got a grasp of that, then you'd arrange for your drugs to be brought in and you'd approach others who were also selling drugs on a wing and say to them, let's get something going together. I went to prison with £30,000. By the time I got out of prison, I had £560,000 odd.
Simon says he picked the people who'd work for his drug outfit carefully, the carriers and the enforcers.
First and foremost, you'll have torpedoes, little hit squad who go in, three or four prisoners who you know can fight and cause damage. If someone needs beating up or a drug debt needs collecting, you tell them don't just go in and give them a few punches, you go in and you stamp all over them. Cut them if you need to, and you do that just to set an example to the old prison. Second is obviously the mules. You just find a normal guy on a wing and say, have you got a bird? And he says, yeah, I can get you a mobile phone if you start going on visits for me. On each parcel, you get like two Zancos. Now, these Zancos are a little phone, the size of your little finger, and you probably get 4 or 5 ounces of spice, sellotape together, or even weed. Outside, the reality is it would probably cost you 100 quid, but you can make 4.5 grand inside.
And if the mules were caught, what then?
I would just look at it like it's their own fault. If they'd been daft enough to get caught, it's probably just bad luck, but it's down to them.
Ruthless, certainly, and increasingly inventive. Criminal gangs have found they can get even larger amounts of drugs in by ordering deliveries to their cell windows by drone or through packages propelled over the walls, as I discovered at Altcourse.
There's those high sort of normal trees. That's the perimeter, is it, of the prison?
Yeah, so you've got the grey wall in the distance there. The trees are on the outside of the perimeter, and that's a public area that people can walk around. You can see in front of you the vertical netting. We've extended almost double that size. We were getting throwovers. I mean, you can see the prison wall. It's not that far. So for someone to throw a package over from the forestry area at the back, this is a main area that those packages were landing. So we've put the vertical netting up in the hope that that will stop some of it. They use catapults, dog throwers, the plastic dog throwers, they use that sort of thing to throw the drugs into the prison. So that's another route for us that we've always got to tackle. We'll run operations with the police when we've got timings, days of the week that it's regularly happening.
It's a significant investment, but has it made a difference?
Yeah, it is very expensive, but it's worth it. You know, we are catching prisoners trying to get the parcels. We're not seeing as many getting into prisoners' hands. We have had some occasions where the smaller parcels, I think they use something like petrol or something as an inflammatory, set it alight, catapult it in, and then in the hope that it will burn through the netting and fall onto the floor in the exercise yard. So you'll see some of it has been patched up around where that's happened.
Ingenious, really, isn't it? You know, whatever you do, they'll try and find a way around it.
Sadly, they're always one step ahead.
I want to stay here forever.
That's not quite the plan.
This is a large sealed evidence bag, similar to the police used to cover all their evidence, and contained in this particular bag is a package which we recovered. And as you can smell, it's a very strong smell of cannabis resin. Very, very strong. There is a large amount of cannabis resin. I would estimate prison value is around £200,000 worth of cannabis there.
And proof the perimeter can be breached is in this see-through plastic bag on a table in the prison security office. The head of security is Mark Jones.
Is this all one seizure, or is this over a period of time?
No, this is one seizure, so one bag is one seizure.
You seize that in one go, and that's £200,000 worth of cannabis?
If to put it into prison value, then yes.
And where was this seized from?
It's landed in front on one of our football pitches. So we're going to show you some photographs of some of the items we seized. So this is one we've recently picked up. Very basic drone, but it had sort of drugs attached to it, and tobacco, which is now an item which can't be used in establishments.
Have you noticed an increase in tobacco smuggling then?
There's certainly been an increase in prisoners trying to get tobacco into the establishments. If we catch a prisoner with a package, then we'll refer that to Merseyside Police. So last year we referred, I think it was 18
cases. We've had a prisoner got 3 years for bringing drugs in with false arm. The false arm with Jenny, he's just found a place to hide Class A drugs in that false arm. Other evidence there is a card that's been sent in from the community.
Looks like a Valentine's card.
It's a Valentine's card with I love my husband, so a 3D type card. So underneath that was a quantity of Class A heroin, which is another avenue that put my staff downstairs are sort of proactive at trying to identify that sort of supply route. Any drug is serious, but Class A drug is a serious issue. For us as an establishment, our violence is down. And I think that's because of the amount of drugs and contraband that we're intercepting. I think, if I'm being honest, we're not going to overly stop it until there's some work done around mobile phone technology, around stopping mobile phones being used within a prison.
The availability of phones hasn't just enabled prisoners to organise supplies behind prison walls. It also allows gangsters to continue their dealings on the outside. Detective Superintendent Lee Turner is the head of Serious and Organised Crime at Merseyside Police.
Years ago, when people went into prison, they were a little bit incommunicado. They obviously had prison payphones that they could use, and that there was face-to-face contact with family members and other members of perhaps their criminal fraternity. The onset of mobile telephone has completely changed how things are done within prison. So when individuals are convicted and go to prison, the ability to continue with their criminal activity is enhanced by the use of mobile telephones. And so they can instruct their other criminal friends, fraternities, lieutenants, if you like, to carry on the business on the outside.
Calm the aggression down and go. Don't tell me what to do.
Detective Superintendent Turner says one police inquiry he ran, Operation Scarver, demonstrated the links between criminality inside and outside prison.
Yeah, can I have a further trolley, please?
Police recordings show officers confronting gangs who were dealing drugs and creating fear on the streets of Anfield, and who were undeterred after being rounded up.
When we arrested them all on a strike day and put them in prison, they still tried to orchestrate activity from within the prison estate using mobile telephones to get their dealers up and running, because obviously we'd taken a whole load of drug dealers off the streets of Merseyside. They wanted new dealers to go and carry on selling their drugs and try to orchestrate activity from within. We got partners involved, local authority involved, the community involved, and that stopped the criminal activity. And fortunately, we've not seen that re-emergence of the drug market within that locality.
What you're painting a picture of is a network of drug supply, drug dealing, drug trafficking, which has no boundaries almost. Would it be better to have a police officer permanently stationed in each prison?
Yes, it would be nice to have a police officer in every prison establishment, but we can't afford that, unfortunately, due to the demands upon us.
The government minister responsible for prisons, Rory Stewart, said police deployments were a matter for local forces, but he acknowledged police had a huge role to play in combating the drugs problem. This month, the government announced it's to spend an extra £6 million on measures to prevent mobile phones being used and to stop drugs being smuggled in.
We should be doing a better job at the searching. So that is kit, it's training, it's sniffer dogs, and it's the visits procedures. There's many, many other things we have to do at the same time. Intelligence work, penetrating organised criminal groups, working with the police.
What about the issue about mobile phones? A couple of years ago, your department issued a white paper and it talked about mobile phone blocking technology and so on, and yet the mobile phone blockers are still not in place. There certainly isn't one at all cause.
One of the problems around mobile telephones is shifts in technology. So you invest in a particular kind of blocker. Often what that blocker is doing is transmitting at a particular frequency in order to overcome the signal from a mobile mast. What will then happen is that you could end up with three mobile phone operators with three masts around your prison. They can change the frequencies of their own transmissions. The kit that you could buy 2-3 years ago would suddenly turn out not to be able to block the new signals coming in, which is why we're now bringing new legislation through Parliament, which would allow us effectively to work much more closely with the mobile telephone companies at source in order to deal with this, rather than playing the strange cat and mouse of having to guess which frequency they're transmitting on. As you can imagine, as technology develops, we can get smarter and smarter But as we get smarter and smarter, obviously our opposition gets smarter and smarter, so there is a technology race going on all the time.
I'm on my way out of London to meet a woman who, through no fault of her own, is caught up in the prison drugs trade. I'll call her Debbie. Her son has been locked up for over 10 years. He's addicted to heroin and has been using spice, and Debbie is being forced to pay for it.
On my phone, I'm going through my bank statements and what I pay to these people.
So what's the most recent statement you've got there?
That one.
This was yesterday?
Yeah.
This was £50 you paid to an individual who's named on your statement yesterday?
Yeah.
And that was a payment to pay for your son's drugs in prison?
Yeah, because he had a debt of £250. He went on to the methadone, and it's just an outstanding bill now, I'm hoping.
Every week, Debbie transfers about £100 from her bank account to people she's never met, people who threaten violence unless she agrees to their demands.
And there's another payment to the same person.
Yeah.
That was on...
on the Tuesday.
On Tuesday.
And then another one on Monday.
To a different individual.
Yeah. Yeah. This is how it's been going. And another one on the Tuesday before that, another £50. Then another £20.
Debbie pays up because she's scared her son will be attacked in prison if she doesn't. He's already been assaulted once, sustaining injuries to his face. The threats escalated one Christmas after a demand for £350.
Who was the phone call from?
It was just another inmate telling me that my son owed this money. Obviously, I asked why. And he told me it was for the stuff that he'd been taking. I ended up going into my bank account, which was my grandchildren's Christmas money. And I felt I had to pay it because I was told that if I don't pay it, my son's going to pay the price. Basically, he's going to get hurt. It just stemmed from there. If you owed them £50 and you didn't pay them on the day you say you was going to pay them, they put money on top. And it goes up and up and up and up until you end up eventually paying it. I've had people phone me up and tell me if I don't pay a certain amount of money, I'm going to have people come around and do me over the head with a baseball bat.
You've had people saying that to you?
Yeah.
On the phone?
Yeah, yeah.
Prisoners or prisoners. Associates of prisoners?
Prisoners.
Debbie says her son's girlfriend has paid out even more than she has. They've now split up.
How much money has she paid?
All in all, she says I've earned about £20,000.
£20,000 she's paid out?
It's not just solely for drugs. It's for other things that he's had. They really don't understand what they're putting us through. Not only me as a mum, but their wives, their girlfriends, their children. And I blame the dealers.
One negative impact of the trend towards a more industrial-scale or gang-based drug market is a lot more intimidation. And that intimidation can be on the prisoners, but also on their families.
Mike Trace has worked in the drugs policy and treatment field for 30 years. He was once the country's deputy drug czar and now runs a charity, the Forward Trust. He says the threats and violence directed at prisoners' families are far more prevalent now than they used to be.
Imagine you're in that situation where you're separated from a member of family. You will have mixed feelings about them. They're in prison. There's usually family dysfunction or arguments. And that person is saying to you, I am desperate. I must have these drugs. The psychological dilemmas and the moral dilemmas that put somebody in is not something, thankfully, I've had to face. And I wouldn't wish it on anybody.
I have to scrimp and scrape. Begging boys, apart from steal. It has to be done. But then he's not thinking about what I'm going through. Who's out here fighting for him?
I mean, has it occurred to you that you should stop paying this amount of money?
I want to. There's nothing I can do. Nothing. I've tried so much and I just can't keep on doing it. Sometimes I want to walk away, but I can't because he's my son and I love him. I tell him all the time I'm not paying his debts no more. And then I find out I'm paying them again. It's hard.
So literally, you will get a phone call at some point this weekend or this week?
I had a phone call this morning. Asked if I put money into someone's account. I know I will end up getting the details and I will end up putting the money in because I don't want him getting hurt.
Enough is enough. Too many cuts. Give us the resources to do our job. Support these people in front of you.
At the annual conference of the Prison Officers Association this year, drugs and gang violence were issues high on the agenda, with members blaming the problems on failures of government policy and budget cuts.
The cause is the fact that we've destabilised our prisons through having less staff, less resources, less security measures. Now, 10 years ago, you wouldn't have seen officers with 10 and 15 years leaving this job, but they're that fried now that they're losing experience out that door. And the new ones coming in, I actually feel pity for, in actual fact, because they're coming to that destabilising environment. They're not learning that basic trade of jailcraft, you want to call it.
Somewhere in the hierarchy, a decision's been made to introduce young offenders into the adult estate. Older prisoners will basically take advantage of their naivety, of their willingness to prove themselves and get some sort of gang credibility. You know, they get paid in terms of being able to join a gang or drugs to do somebody else's dirty work, whether that's attack a member of staff, attack another prisoner.
Mobile phones are better quality, they've got FaceTime. They're on FaceTime to the mates outside, chucking it over. Yeah, yeah, he's in position, chuck it now. And we're so far behind, we've got one phone blocker for 1,000 prisoners. And we have to go and move it around every 6 weeks, so they don't know where it is. One mobile phone blocker.
The pressures on prisons have eased a little over the past year. Extra frontline staff have been recruited and 1,000 more offenders have been freed early on electronic tags. But a former governor, Ian Atchison, who led a prison security review for the government, believes more radical measures are needed to tackle the organised criminals dealing drugs.
Well, I was the person who recommended the creation of separation units based on intelligence for those most highly subversive prisoners, Islamist extremists, for example, who are challenging and undermining rehabilitation in prisons by their pernicious messages. This is another pernicious form of activity, the drugs market, and I'm absolutely clear that where intelligence exists that can identify these people, then you completely incapacitate them from running their drugs operations inside the prison. And that means isolating them from the rest of the prison population. And of course, offering them a chance to change. But the prize is that you disrupt completely that supply chain. And you send a message out across the system that says, we absolutely will not tolerate this challenge to prison authority by turning a blind eye to the appalling drug problem there is in prison. We are manufacturing a generation of offenders who will go out worse than they come in, victimise other people and destroy their own lives.
The core to this is having a safe, stable, well-run prison regime.
Rory Stewart says leadership, management and morale are key to tackling the drugs economy. The prisons minister says a new task force is being set up, focusing on 10 jails with the most serious problems. They do not include alt courts.
Above all, it's about what happens day in, day out on the landing. Are people consistent? Are they fair? Are they listening to prisoners? Can they identify when a problem's emerging? Because quite a lot of these issues ought to be dealt with at that level. Ideally, if you find yourself being dragged into the illicit economy in a prison, you need to have the relationship with the prison officer and the trust in the system to be able to go with them to extract yourself.
But your government cut the number of prison officers, frontline prison staff, by 6,000 to 7,000. Do you think, looking back, you're a fresh minister in post, that was too many?
Obviously, prison numbers matter, and that's why we're employing another 2,500 additional prison officers. So the fact that we're doing that shows that we think we want more prison officers. But it is worth bearing in mind that some of our best prisons in the country are being run with far fewer prison officers and are achieving some pretty impressive results. I think the extra 2,500 is the right number because that gives the ability of each prison officer to sit down with six prisoners once a week and develop those personal relationships.
The problem of drugs in prisons is not something new. Why hasn't it been tackled and dealt with more quickly? You're clearly putting some real effort and some ideas into it, but your predecessors were a bit slow off the mark, weren't they?
I think my predecessors were very serious about this.
But the drug fines are going up, the figures on assaults are at record levels. There's no end to it.
The big change here is around these synthetic cannabinoid psychoactive substances. I mean, they are very, very nasty, dangerous, weird chemicals. They're difficult to pick up and test for, and they can be moved in microscopic quantities in more and more ingenious ways. So it's true that we are dealing with them piece by piece at the same time as we're dealing with a very lucrative, innovative market that keeps trying to get round. So we are pushing hard to get on top of this. I believe we will get on top of this. I've chosen a group of prisons with some of the worst drug impacts, brought in a drug task force, and I hope that I can demonstrate to you in 12 months that we will have significantly reduced their drug use.
So in those prisons where you're putting the effort in, you're saying in 12 months' time, you will have reduced the amount of drugs and phones in those prisons?
I am saying that, Danny, and I would expect you to come back and hold me to task in 12 months' time if I haven't succeeded in doing that.
In spite of the problems, prisons are also places of hope. Here, in the fabrication workshop at Altcourse, inmates are making office furniture, gaining skills and experience to help them get a job when they leave. On another wing, offenders who are dependent on drugs or alcohol are given support and counselling to help conquer their addiction. But Mike Trace from the Forward Trust says across the prison estate, those trying to help are swimming against the tide of a vibrant drugs market where supply matches demand.
In just about every prison wing, there is a battle for supremacy from different groups of prisoners, different gangs, between the staff and the prisoners. And at any one time, that needle can go left or right. You can have the gangs and the prisoners in control, or you could have the staff in control. What we're interested in is creating environments where the prisoners themselves want there to be a drug-free environment. The only way we can ultimately change the numbers is to reduce that demand and give people a way out of that cycle and offer them treatment, offer them support and incentives to stay away from the drug market rather than become a willing participant.
Danny Shaw, the BBC's Home Affairs correspondent, reported that edition, and Sally Chesworth produced it. And for more about what we do, you can follow us on Twitter, BBC Fylon 4.